Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Tuesday, September 6th. I'm Ray Graff. Our favorite bird experts, Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart, are back to share their knowledge and answer your questions about the birds. Give us a call if you want to join the fun. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Or you could be like a couple of people who have already done so. You can email voxpop@wamc.org is the email address. voxpop@wamc.org if you have a burning birding question. But the number again is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, Julie Hart, your birding calls, or bird calls, if you will, coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We are discussing birds today, and when we do that, we welcome our resident avian experts, Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. Rich is retired from the New York State DEC, now is the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. He's a dynamic after-dinner speaker, and his tour begins soon. Rich Guthrie, always a great guest to have on this program. Julie Hart is back. Julie is the New York Breeding Bird Atlas Project Coordinator. She coordinates with thousands of volunteers to document bird breeding behaviors. She has a focus on bird conservation and citizen science. You got some birds you want to talk about? Let's do that. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551 or email voxpop@wamc.org. Julie Hart, Rich Guthrie, welcome back.
Howdy, howdy.
Hello, thanks for having us.
Great to have you back on the program. Before we start, Rich, when is your next speaking engagement?
Dynamics after dinner, none coming up.
None?
But however, I will tell you that on September 17th, day before my birthday, I've got down with Cornell Cooperative Extension in Greene County, New York.
So your birthday is December 18th.
Yeah, so...
All right, we're going to write that. That's a week before Christmas, so I really can't get you two gifts. That's all I'm saying.
That's all right. No, don't slow down on my account.
All right. Maybe I'll get you a bird or something, right?
No.
No?
So anyway, that's at Akron, New York, and that's it's an all-day event. It's called a Bio Blitz.
A Bio Blitz?
Yeah, it's not a term I'm particularly fond of, but that's the label, this sort of thing. I like it. It's sort of like a bio focus. But
on bile?
Biology.
Bio.
No,
I thought you said bile. What kind of a, I've had a few bile blitzes myself, but Pepto-Bismol cures it pretty well. Okay, now I understand.
Yeah, birds, and mammals, amphibians, and flowers, and trees. And
insects.
Cool.
Yes, all coming up on the 17th at Cornell Cooperative Extension, Greene County, New York. Check it out online.
This is in December.
No, September.
Oh, September. Oh, your birthday's in... I thought you said... Okay.
You want to borrow my earphones?
No, I don't want to borrow your hearing aids, and don't ask me again. All right, let's start with some emails that came in. This is from Nadine and Tom. Came in very early this morning. We've been listening to a red-tailed hawk soaring overhead lately. Wonder why it emits a call while seeming to be on the hunt. The chipmunks sound an alarm call, and the birds head for cover. Doesn't this calling by the hawk scare all the prey? And that's from Nadine and Tom.
Well, that's a really fun question, because they do that. They do that sometimes for no reason at all, it seems. But most often, from what I've seen, it's parent-young parent talking back and forth. And, kind of yell out to one another that they're here. The other thing is that if you're hiking, walking through the field, and there's a red-tailed hawk in the tree in the far distance, and you bump it, it flies off the perch because you're getting a little too close. They generally put that call out there, and I think it's not a nice word.
Can you confirm that, Julie Hart?
Yeah, they're a little upset at you.
Yeah, fair enough. And by the way, speaking of the Breeding Bird Atlas, which we mentioned at the beginning of the show, roughly how many blue herons make their way to this area, New York State?
Oh my gosh, that's it.
Lots and lots.
Yeah, lots.
Yeah.
We were out on Duane Lake. My wife and I went out to visit friends there and woke up Saturday or Sunday morning, and it was early, and I just started to walk down to the lake, and there was this massive, just huge bird flapping its wings like the billionaire's wooden plane trying to take off. Howard Hughes.
Howard Hughes.
But
yeah.
This thing was. I mean, how big do they get?
They are big.
They look like modern day pterodactyls.
Exactly, yeah. And they sound like one too.
Do they make noise?
Oh yeah.
What do they sound like, Rich?
It's not a nice word.
Cracking, croaking.
It was so cool.
They do that when there's another one around. And the thing about them, for every two, they are colonial nesters. So if you're in an area where there's a colony of them nearby, there's going to be a lot because there's going to be a concentration of them. And then for every two that came up in April, there are now five.
Yeah.
So the numbers have dramatically increased over the course of the summer. And
do they head south?
Oh, yeah. They'll be a few stick around, but most of them gone. And they're leaving now. And the other thing is because we had this long, prolonged drought, there's a lot of their favorite watering holes that have dried up.
Yeah.
And they need fish and frogs. So they probably found a good spot, and there they are. They all kind of like, you all come in now.
All right. This email is from Mike in Rexford. It's about hummingbirds, and we have a few emails about that. Mike writes, I have a couple hummingbird feeders in my backyard. I get lots of hummingbirds stopping by every day, but only females and juveniles. I didn't see a male all summer. I'm looking for a patch of red on the neck to identify a male. I change the nectar every few days. Do you have any ideas why I'm not seeing males? And that is from Mike in Rexford.
Well, the males are gone. The adult birds, males and females, the adults leave town early before the kids. The kids are left behind to fend for themselves. And so the what looks like a female could be the young of the year. They all look alike. They all look like the female, not the male so much. So you won't see the males. There'll be a few, of course, and those that are up in Canada are still coming through. But the males and adult females are the first to leave, and now the young are left behind. And so it looked like a bunch of females hanging around.
Yeah.
Right, but why he didn't see any adult males during the summer, I'm not sure. Because usually if they find a really good food source, they'll stay there and guard that food source.
Well, they are very jealous of their spot. And the reason for that is, you know, they're not used to this mother load of sugar water, of nectar. They're used to seeing just a little flower with a drop or two of nectar in there. And that's what they're guarding that carefully because there's a scarce resource. They treat a big jug of sugar water at a hummingbird feeder the same way. It's mine, stay away.
Yeah.
When, you know, in reality, you know, y'all can get along fine. Just come on in one at a time.
You know, it's funny you say that about the guarding of the territory. And we have had so many hummingbirds around our bee bomb and everything else that we have in the garden this year. And they're still coming. And oftentimes I'll see the big bumbler bees hanging out, or whatever kind they are. They're big fatties. They're hanging out by those flowers, too. And the hummingbirds don't seem to care.
No, they're not. They're used to that. They're bigger. They're kind of like they're used to battling it out. They don't always win, but they give it a good try.
Do they battle each other?
No, they don't. They just intimidate one another. And it's a standoff.
They all seem to be hanging out. Like kumbaya moment there with the...
Yeah. And it could be. I mean, I've seen hummingbirds and bumblebees on the same patch of flowers one after the other. But the yellow jackets at the bird feeder, at the hummingbird feeder, that's a different story.
Yeah.
And with them, it's again a question of will the hummingbird be so tenacious to frustrate the yellow jacket and then get his turn? But it's nip and tuck.
All right, tell you what, we're going to take a break here in a minute, but one more hummingbird question. This is from someone whose name is not on here, and I cannot infer it from their email address. Beg your pardon. It's in the text. It's Marty from Hadley. Quick question. Have the hummingbirds left the area already? I had about 7 regular visitors in the last few days, but none at all over the last few. What gives? And that is from Marty.
They're still around.
They're at my house.
No, most of them have already left town. But in my case, and I know in other places, there's still a few lingerers not ready to go yet. They're still building up their fat reserve. And the weather right now is not conducive to leaving town. They've got to wait for a good tailwind to get out. So next day or two, counting down, they'll be gone. You want to keep our feeders out there right into October and perhaps even touching November because some of the western birds will come east before going south. And we're always interested in those guys.
And Julie, you mentioned an interloper from across the country that is here.
Yeah, we had a couple weeks ago, we had a Rufus hummingbird at our feeders in Del Mar. And they're the same size as our normal ruby-throated, but these guys are all this nice rusty red.
Mm.
They're beautiful.
Did you take a picture?
We did, yes.
The people over at eBird are very skeptical.
Exactly.
Unless rich.
People would not
believe
us.
I was thoroughly convinced right off the bat.
All right, let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is the number. Email is voxpop@wamc.org, but we will hit the phones in a moment. Vox Pop on WAMC. It's the Birds today with Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie. 800-348-2551 is the number. Just a reminder, there are only 12 shopping days until Rich's birthday on September 18th. All right, let's go to the phones. John in Florida, Massachusetts. John, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. This year, I've noticed the American goldfinches are much brighter than they've ever been before. And I was wondering if there's a subspecies that may be moving northward from Virginia or West Virginia or something, because they're much brighter than I've ever seen before.
I can't say that I've noticed anything like that. I will say that we've had a lot more sunnier days.
Well, that makes them appear brighter.
It's not just sunshine.
No, I agree with you.
They're really brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant yellow.
I hear what you're saying, and I love it when they're like that. And it's the adult males. It's the second year and older males that are brighter than the younger males. So that may be a factor in there. And I don't know. I don't have a recall of last year's breeding success, but you may have a higher than usual population of older goldfinches around that may reflect that brighter image that you're getting.
Yeah, well, they're certainly brighter. I'm mid-50s, and I've been watching them for years. So, they're very bright this year.
Julie,
I was just curious if they were migrating northward, like a subspecies.
No, there's no subspecies moving northward. But to Rich's question about how their success was last year, I felt like last year it seemed like there were quite a few young birds, but then they would only be a year old now. So I don't know that there's a high number, although I would say that this year I have not seen that many juveniles. And so it does feel like there's more adult
males. Neither have I,
this
for
year.
That matter. Thanks.
That's interesting. But I've got to say, John, I agree with you. Now, you know, full disclosure, I don't know much about birds or really anything else for that matter, but I had made the same observation. Those goldfinches are brilliant this year.
There you go.
They are brilliant. They are brilliant.
There you go.
Yes.
I love it. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. Birds today with Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie. And we go, good heavens, to Murgatroyd here. We're going to go to Florida, Massachusetts again. Victor, you're on.
Yeah, I'm right down the hill from John.
I didn't know they had hills in Florida. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's all we got, hills. We're on a big one. So anyway, I got plenty of goldfinch here. I've been letting a thistle grow, and they've been feeding on it like crazy, and they're just as gold as they ever were around here. But I don't know what he's got up on the hill up there, different from me. But the goldfinch, the males are bright yellow, and the females are normal. They're all normal as far as I can tell.
Okay, fair enough.
But well, that's not why I called.
All right, go ahead.
I called about hummingbirds. So I've got about 10 that seem to like it around my house here. I had two bird feeders, and there was only one hummingbird that was willing to share with another hummingbird the same feeder, but the other hummingbird would never let that one share. And so I went and I got two more. So I got four bird feeders. I got two on each, one on each side of my front door and one at each end of my woodshed. They're underneath an overhang, so they stay dry. But they still, it's one to one. That's all. They won't go they'll spend an hour and a half fighting each other that they could be eating. But
you're darn right about that. You wish you could just get along and take your turn.
I know, but they don't.
And you wonder how they ever get any food.
Yeah.
Well, one of them will get on there and they'll stay for their heart's content and they'll fly off a couple times to battle and they'll be back and sometimes another one takes the place there. I mean, they seem to have, I didn't know if they were actually fighting or if this is just part of their social routine or what it was.
All right.
Well again, I think it's about their instinctive caution about the resource, the amount of resource that's available. And they're not used to seeing an unlimited supply of nectar like we have put out there for them. So they're used to just a drip and drab here and there, and they guard that very carefully because there's not that much to go around. Little do they know, because it takes time to learn that there's plenty.
Yeah, well, I got the bird feeders are full all the time. They shouldn't have a problem.
Well, they shouldn't, but they do because they're not used to reading full bird feeders. They're looking at little teacup flowers.
All right, Victor, thanks for the call. It's Birds Today with Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie. The number is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpopwamc.org. And David writes in, and he's cracking wise, frankly. He says, hi, everybody. The plane by Howard Hughes was entitled The Spruce Goose. Sincerely, David. P.S. My girlfriend is an audiologist. Just saying. So they're making fun of the fact that I'm a little hard of hearing.
All my hearing aids, if you like.
It hurts me. It wounds me. All right, let's go to Red Hook. And David, you're on.
Hello. First time caller, long time burger.
Welcome.
Hi.
Thanks. I have a question about a flock of robins that appeared last winter. I mean, the dead of winter. I think it was February. There had been an ice storm. Believe me, there are no worms for the robins to feed on. I didn't know why they were here. I have an amateur theory, if you'd like to hear it.
Theory
is that they were migrating, and they got caught up in a nor'easter or something and were blown to the area ahead of schedule. So, any thoughts?
Nope.
Oh, ouch. That was quick. Perfunctory dismissal.
I'm sure Rich has more to say, but I was going to say, ask if you have any fruit trees in your yard or nearby.
Actually, I do, and they were on a combination apple tree and crab apple tree. It's, you know, two trees grafted together.
Yeah. Wow, nice.
So
That's why they were there.
Here's the thing.
There wasn't any fruit on that tree, and they were in other trees. But I mean, I'm serious. These were Hitchcockian levels of robins.
Yeah, David, robins really don't leave our area in the winter. They're here, and Julie says, they're around looking for fruit trees in the late winter, and sometimes that's their survival food because there's nothing else around. Like you say, no worms, that's for sure. But they are fruit-eating birds, and they look for overwinter frozen thawed fruit. That's their delicacy in January, February through March.
All right, David, thank you very much for the call. Our number on this program is 800-348-2551. It's Birds Today with Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. We go up to Ballston Spa. It's Kelsey. Hello, Kelsey. How you doing?
Hi, good. How are you?
Good. What's up?
I'm so excited to get through. So 2 weeks ago, I was vacationing with my family in Gloucester, Mass. And we were up in Maine earlier in the summer, and we didn't experience any of this. But on one of our walks, I saw 3 dead seagulls. And then the next day on the beach, there was a 6th seagull that somebody had to remove. And then the day after that, there was a dead seal. And I was wondering if you think this is bird flu related or what?
Interesting.
Yeah, it could very likely be a contributor, if not the cause, or something totally different. But that's very unusual to see that concentration of, have you reported this or have you heard anything from the Maine or the Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection about that? Because for one thing, they would be very interested in knowing about it.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that, yes, the bird flu is or was present. It's pretty well run its course from what I understand. And just so everybody doesn't panic, it's mainly confined to waterfowl and large concentrations of geese, ducks, gulls, and opportunistic eagles, unfortunately, may feed on any of the victims of the avian flu. As far as the seal is concerned, I don't know. There could be a number of causes for that.
Julie's shaking her head.
Yeah, I think that's probably just really coincidence. Creepy.
Yeah. Definitely, and very unpleasant, I'm sure. But the DEP, the Environmental Agency in Massachusetts and the local health officials would be very interested to know more about that if they haven't already investigated it.
We called them, and they had NOAA come out and tag it and then remove it. So
that NOAA would be for the seal, I imagine.
Yeah, for the seal,
right. And the eagles.
Yeah, I was just curious.
The eagles, again, there'd be a definite concern about that, and I hope that there was some investigation. I don't know the answer to it, but I hope somebody had looked into it.
All right, Kelsey.
Yeah, me too.
Well, thank you for
thank
calling.
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll see you. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Birds Today. Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie here to answer your questions. Let's go out to Otis, Massachusetts. Scott, you're on.
Here you go. Hello. Hey, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Hi, Ray, Rich, and Julie.
Hi.
I have a question. It was a few weeks ago, or maybe a little more, I was heading out to my shed, and then across the brook, it was sunny, and I down through the glare, I see a few birds go by, and then a few more, and then a few more, and there must have been 100 or more. And they were only 15, 20 feet off the ground, and there was tons of them. I'm just curious. And they were black, not the size of a crow. And then after that, one hung around. I don't know if it was the same one or not, but in the sun, it had a metallic purple-blue head, kind of. And I was just curious what you thought about that.
Yeah, it sounds like you had probably a flock of grackles, common grackles. The adult males are glossy and they iridescent, and then they have this like purple greenish head in certain light. And there's still probably some flocks of them going over, but a lot of them did come through a couple weeks ago, as well as the red-winged blackbirds as well.
And that's kind of typical of the blackbird migration pattern. Huge flocks, they gather together, they all take off at once. And they kind of like stream through. They form these ribbons of blackbirds. And if you've ever seen them that might have been a flock that was feeding locally and then, decided to change location. But if you ever see one of them in real long-distance migration, they could fill the sky with a ribbon of blackbirds that will go on for minutes and minutes and minutes and just waving through the air in a long stream. It's fascinating to see.
Yeah, it was wild.
Yeah.
All right, well, Scott, thank you very much. We appreciate the call. It's Birds Today on Vox Pop. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Tons of emails. We'll do what we can in a little bit. The number is 800-348-2551. We go to Warwick, I believe, in New York. Ken, you're on. All right.
Hello.
Oh, hello.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
You bet.
All right. I have a question regarding the waste that comes off of our bird feeders. There's always been chipmunks and squirrels that gather underneath the bird feeders, picking up what gets left on the ground. But this year, the population of squirrels and chipmunks were extremely aggressive to the extent that they were really damaging our garden. And we had to stop feeding the birds because the garden was really getting chewed up from the influx of chipmunks. And I'm wondering if there's anything that we can do that would allow us to enjoy the birds and yet still have a garden.
Well, there are some feeder options out there. What comes to mind is those ones that have a saucer-like a base to them that will catch any of the spillage so that it doesn't go straight to the ground. And with the squirrel guard keeping them from going up the pole to the feeder, you might be able to keep the feed away from them by keeping it from spilling onto the ground that way. And then there are some other, let's say, more efficient, less spillage type of feeders that are out there. I would suggest maybe going to one of the bird specialty shops and just, you know, poking around, do a little window shopping and asking questions in there and see what they have in their inventory that might suit the bill.
Yeah, one thing that we've done at my house just to reduce the amount of waste on the ground, too, is to use what are called sunflower chips. So they already have the shells removed. And then the birds tend to eat them really quickly, and not, they don't throw as much of it onto the ground.
Yeah.
That helps a little bit.
Yeah, you always got those one or two that are rummaging through.
A lot of those things already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then
it's a heck of a problem sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, feed the birds, not the squirrels. Well, some people will go the other way around. That's
Now, let's go back to this. We've talked about this. Now, the squirrels don't like spicy stuff, and the birds don't care. Is that correct?
That's what I hear. Mm-hmm.
Okay, because we have a gopher hole, and I poured a lot of Frank's Red Hot down.
Good
the
for
thing.
You.
And but I haven't seen the gopher in a while, but I bet he's got a little indigestion.
I bet he's a little angry at you. Don't go out at night.
Yeah. David and Olive Bridge. David, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had a question, kind of funny. I live in the rural area, and I've got a lot of oak around, and I sometimes be in the backyard sitting grilling or something, and I'll have these acorns coming right at me. I mean, a lot of them hit me. And I've looked up many times, and I'm not expecting, because I got tons of chipmunk squirrels, but it's blue jays, and they're plucking them off, and I swear they look like they're tossing them at me to get rid of me or something.
You're sure it's not raised gophers after you?
No.
Well,
no, I didn't try any hot sauce yet.
No, Frank's Red Hot. Delicious.
I just thought it was funny. I've never heard of it.
Well, blue jays are harvesting acorns right now, and some of them may be caching them away. I don't want to give the blue jays a bad rap. I think it's just an accident. I'm going to forgive them for that. I think you're just in the way.
Yeah, I didn't know that they did that, though. That's the part. I don't care. I like blue jays, too, even though they do have a, a bad rap for their noisy calls and all that. But I didn't know they harvested acorns.
Yeah, they will do that. Not as good as the squirrels do, but then, I think they're probably just trying to grab what they can before the snow flies.
No, don't even say it. David, thanks for the call. We're going to take a break here. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Birds Today. VoxPop@WAMC.org is the email address. And we crack the email bag in a moment. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Birds Today with Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. Our number is 800-348-2551, and we will get back to the phones in a little bit. But let's grab some emails here. This is from Roger in Utica. On Pleasant Lake, Moffett's Beach, in midsummer, I saw one loon on lake, but it appeared to have about one-third of its top bill missing, broken off. How would this likely have happened? By fish line entanglement, or is there another likely cause? Would this not impair their ability to feed? Should such observations be reported to the DEC, as the loon is still, I believe, a bird of significant concern as to population? Do you have any updated info on loon numbers or lakes they occupy in New York?
Yeah, so there was a lot in that question.
I
do not know.
Recap if you need.
Exactly how that would happen. I mean, yeah, fishing line entanglement is one possible way. Loons are also can be very aggressive with each other as well. They do fight. The only real predators of adult loons would be bald eagles. So I don't know. I don't know. Do you have any suggestions?
No, I think it's very unusual. It's very unfortunate. Yeah. I've seen occasional bird with a broken mandible, but it is
like
so rare. And yes, DEC or there's a loon watch organization in the Adirondacks. I'm sure they would want to know about it. I don't know what intervention they could do. People have put on prosthetic bills on some birds, especially pelicans down south.
Mm-hmm. No, you're kidding me.
No, seriously.
Yeah, they do, yeah.
And they seem to work. I'm always impressed with the amount of energy and effort, time and patience and love that goes into this. People would be interested. Loon Watch, I forget the name of the organization.
The Adirondack Loon Cooperative.
Okay.
They also do the annual loon census. And so they have volunteers that go out on a certain day every summer. And around July 4th, I'm not sure the exact date. But and then so everyone is out there and counting all the loons in the state. And they do produce some maps, and then you can also check on the Atlas website. So if you were to go to the Breeding Bird Atlas website, so you go to ebird.org/atlasny, and then go to the Explore tab, and you just type in common loon, and you'll see the map of where they all are in the state.
How long do they live, generally?
30 years in
wow.
Yeah,
so, 20,
a survival loon
can
be 30 years old,
mm-hmm. and they're monogamous, correct?
It's
no,
a nice
is that
story.
A myth? It's a story.
Yeah, sounds nice, and it may or may not be true. It's hard to tell.
There's a lot of extra pair copulation is the term that we call it.
I just call it loose morals myself.
Yes, there you go.
Hey, by the way, Rich, you have a list. I forgot to go to the list after the break. I'm
remiss. Well, let me just say this: that September is here. And there's a lot of birders have gotten out of bed and they're out of their easy chairs and they're going out in the field and looking and they're joining with others. Lots and lots and lots going on out there. The Hudson Mohawk Bird Club, hmbc.net. Check it out. They're going to be going to some interesting places. For example, they'll be going over to the Albany Pine Bush on September 11th.
Yeah.
And September 10th, they're going over to Columbia County, New York, to Hand Hollow to have a look around out there. And the Alan DeVoe Bird Club will be doing the Helderberg Hawk Watch September 17th, and that's at Thatcher State Park. Check out alandevoebirdclub.org. Down in Orange County area of New York, the Mearns Bird Club, M-E-A-R-N-S, birdclub.org, on September 17th, will be going to Winding Waters Trail at the Wallkill River National Wildlife Refuge for a walk around for fall migrants. And then on the 28th of September, they'll be going to Stony Kill Farm in Fishkill, Dutchess County.
Okay.
And a couple more. Also on the 17th, Hudson River Audubon Society will be doing a nature walk at the Lenore Preserve. And later in the day, a hawk watch, same place. And the hawk watch will be going on Saturdays right on through into October.
Mm-hmm.
That's down in near Yonkers, New York.
Uh-huh.
And the John Burroughs Natural History Society on September 10th, fall migration at the Burroughs Sanctuary in West Park, Ulster County, New York. I do want to say that the New York State Ornithological Association is having their annual meeting this year, September 30th through October 2nd at Oswego, New York. NYSOA, New York State Ornithological Association. Check them out. They have some magnificent speakers and programs coming up.
Are you speaking at that?
I am not.
I am.
You are. Julie Hart, what's the topic?
The Atlas, of
the
course.
Atlas. Oh, that's
the
right.
Atlas. Yes, the Atlas, of course.
Everybody wants it.
And we'll have a table as well. So if you have any questions about the Breeding Bird Atlas, come and talk to one of us.
Is that just a killer party? Do people get nuts at the end of the day and just swinging from the chandeliers?
From the start of the day.
Look at me, I'm a
it's
bird.
It's more the start of the day, yeah, because we get up early and go birding.
All right, let's see. Okay, this is the only email we have time for. There's so many more, and I apologize. Greg writes, the swifts are one of my favorite birds. At times, they fly just over the rooftops, and at others, they're barely visible up in the sky. I assume they're following a cloud of insects. Is there a reason for their food to migrate up and down? Are there clouds of insects floating through our atmosphere? And that's from Greg.
Well, right about now, there are many insects that are hatching out just in time for the swifts and swallows and nighthawks in their migration. And good for them. And they do fly high. These are mainly, I think it's mainly flying ants, but there are some others. Mayflies, despite the month, are also out and about. And so, yes, there's an abundance of food.
Okay.
Unfortunately, not as much as there needs to be because our aerial insect-eating birds are on a serious decline. And it's very troublesome. We have far fewer swallows and swifts and nighthawks than we used to have.
I mean, isn't it because the insects are disappearing?
Absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah.
No food, no bird.
Okay. Well, that's depressing. Let's go.
The insects do move up and down in the air column depending on the weather conditions.
Mm. All right, let's go back to our phones. We go to Kingston and Catherine. Catherine, you're up.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm enjoying the show.
Well, thank you.
I wanted to ask about some displaced geese that I found or that I encountered in July in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, actually. There was a big rainstorm, and then I was leaving an establishment and walking to the train, and I saw this huge, like mile-long buildup of cars, and in front of the first car, there was a family of geese walking straight down the middle of the road and causing this pileup, and they weren't inclined to fly, and people were trying to go around them, and there were bikes, and I was worried that someone would hit one of the geese. It seemed to be a family, and so I went out in front of the cars and tried to escort the geese over the sidewalk, and there were a few pedestrians nearby that helped me sequester them into a gated area, and we sat with them for at least an hour, and they just weren't inclined to fly. Their wings were still wet, and I couldn't figure out why they didn't just fly back towards some body of water, because we were very far inland in a residential area, and it didn't seem like they should be there.
You're right. Brooklyn's no place for a good goose. I would say that a pair of geese decided to nest in a green patch somewhere in Brooklyn, and all the babies hatched out. It could be 8, 9, 5, 7, and they all decided they were going to go find that pond that they should have found first. And so they're on their way. And the young ones may be incapable of flying. They may be too young, haven't developed the flight wings yet.
Well,
so,
take a cab.
Yeah, they could have called Uber. But no, they decided to walk.
All right.
And good for you for herding them in.
Wow, that's cool. Go ahead, Catherine.
We have to help our neighbors.
Indeed.
You did a good job.
Thanks for the call. It's Birds Today. Julie Hart at Rich Guthrie join us. And now we go to Westerlo. Victor, you're up.
So I have a awesome crop of hummingbirds that have been hanging around my house, and I've been feeding them on a regular basis. And I guess my question is that I know they're going to be hitching rides on, you know, geese to head south for the winter. Am I doing my hummingbirds a disservice by leaving the feeder out, or should I leave it out until a certain time? What are your thoughts?
Leave the feeder out.
Yeah, leave it out.
Let them fatten up. And no, they're not hitching rides. They do it on their own. Those teeny tiny little balls of energy are going to have to fly to Mexico all on their own. No help. But you're going to help. Fatten them up.
Gotcha.
Give them the juice to go.
How fast does a hummingbird fly?
All right, excellent. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't hurting them. That's
nope.
All.
No.
Thanks, Victor.
Keep the feeder going right in through October.
How fast do they go?
They're very, very fast. They very zip fast. Right along. I don't know. I would say 30 miles an hour is probably a good estimate.
Really?
Yeah, it's probably good. Yeah.
You get a little tailwind and go to town.
That's what they look for. They need help.
That is exciting. All right, over to Northville, and Steve, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
I have a place on the Great Sagandaga Lake.
Cool.
Which is host to a wide variety of birds.
Okay.
But I have a particular blue jay who behaves in a manner that is different from the other blue jays. I stock my bird feeder with black oiled sunflower seeds, which they all love.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the birds love it, the chipmunks love it, the squirrels love it, the raccoons love it. I even have a deer who bangs into it to knock some seeds on the ground.
Okay.
Well, this one particular blue jay, when the feeder is empty, he perches on my picture window from the outside to see if I'm in my lazy boy, and he pecks on the window.
Ah, good for him.
And if I'm there and I don't get up to refill the feeder, he flies to a local branch and he dive bombs the picture window and bounces off of the picture window, turns in the air and lands on a branch.
Get out of the chair.
Let him imprint.
Get up. Come on now.
Well, I do.
Yeah.
If I don't get out of the chair, he dive bombs the picture window, and I still have the imprint of the feathers from his wing on the dirty outside surface of the picture window.
Oh, God.
He has recently lost his crown, that little tuft at the top of his head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he looks kind of funny because he looks bald. But I'm wondering if this is a typical blue jay behavior.
Yes and no, and no and yes.
Yeah, my blue jays also, they know who we are, and they know as soon as our car comes into the driveway, as soon as we step out, if those feeders are empty, they are right on top
that
of
is
us
amazing.
And calling and like, come feed us now.
We demand. Yeah.
That's right.
So you got them hooked.
If someone else is sitting in my lazy boy, a stranger, a visitor, he doesn't peck.
That is amazing. Well, why don't you invite him in,
Steve?
He
seems to know me.
Yeah.
Well,
you know,
because everybody would want to come in.
Yeah, exactly.
40 chipmunks,
you did a good job. Squirrels. You got to be careful what you wish for.
Yeah,
you
then it'll be like Rich's house, Steve. So you don't want to do that. thank you very much for the call. We go to, let's see, who's been waiting longest here? Oh, Steve in town. Mark, you're on.
Can you hear me? Yes.
Yes, go ahead.
So I'm not sure this is a bird question, but I heard Rich and Julie mentioning fruit trees. And so I have apples and pear trees, and I get the fruit in the springtime, and then the deer seem to eat the low ones. But I can't figure out if it's birds that are eating the high ones. And I thought it might be raccoons climbing, but when you mentioned the robins, I just thought, give them a call, see what's up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could be the birds, and also, you know, those yellow jackets will also gnaw into an apple on a tree and leave a bit of a notch in there.
And they don't gnaw into them;
they take the whole thing.
Oh well.
Yeah, are you talking in the winter or when they're shriveled up or
no, summertime?
Oh, in the summer. Oh,
summertime.
Huh.
It may not be a bird question, but
I mean,
you piqued my interest when you spoke.
Yeah, squirrels definitely do eat apples too, but yeah, I think robins and the cedar waxwings and things like that are going to be eating the fruit when they've shriveled up and dried a little bit, when they're smaller. But the fresh fruit, yeah, I'm not sure. Not sure who would be doing that other than the mammals.
Yeah. I got a gopher, Mark.
Okay.
I'm a very mad one, too.
Yes, exactly. All right, well, thank you for that. Let's see. We go to Saratoga, and Bill, you're on.
Hello, everybody.
Hi.
Great show. Really enjoy it.
Thank you.
My question is, I heard something about you could use your cell phone to listen to bird calls, and it can identify what kind of bird. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah. Merlin. I love it. Merlin. Go for it. It's free.
You both use this?
Oh, yeah. I use it all
the time. I use it all the time. Yep. You know, my hearing, this thing hears things I can't hear.
Really?
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, you have a hearing problem, too?
Huh? What?
What? Huh? Bill, you want to follow up?
Is like Merlin.com or?
Just Google Merlin or Cornell University's Merlin.
It's an app.
It's an app.
Or Merlin Sound ID.
Go ahead, Bill.
We've seen a lot of birds, you know, over the last 30 years. I've seen birds I've never seen before, and I don't know what they are. I don't know if that's global warming, you know, the movements from someplace else, or what.
Well, it could be a number of factors, but yeah. Merlin will help you find birds that you didn't know were there. And I really recommend, don't believe it all the time. It improves every day. It's still learning. You know, it's one of these... logarithm type thing.
Artificial intelligence kind of a thing.
Yeah. And every time you record something and feed it back to them, it learns from that. So learn how to record the sounds, too, and put it on eBird, eBird.org, and contribute to the science on that. And there's an opening for a real discoveries, is Merlin app using the record mode and submitting it into Cornell.
When they say, you know, it's whatever, yellow-bellied sapsucker, you know, did it show you a picture?
Yeah.
Yes.
It'll do that, and it'll tell you all about it.
Yep. It'll show you the map of where it is and how to identify it and all that. Yeah.
Hey, thanks for bringing that up.
Thanks for the call, Bill. We appreciate it. And, West Lawrence. Hello, Carol, you're on.
Hello. Glad to be on. Last spring, we live on a very rural road, and about six houses on the road. Last spring, a ruffed grouse came across the road from the woods across it and started walking very close to my feet. And as the spring and summer has gone on, she just, when we're out there walking, whether it's us or the neighbors, she comes out and she follows us around, and now she's eating out of our hand. She'll eat blueberries and strawberries. And,
yeah.
Now the berry season is out. I've been feeding her caterpillars, which she seems to really enjoy. So I understand. Two questions. Is this common behavior? Because I've heard ruffed grouse, the males in the woods, but I've never seen them one before. And I just didn't think they were bold birds. And how can we support her through the winter? I know they don't. I understand they don't migrate.
Right. You're onto something there. And rough grouse are kind of peculiar in doing this. Every now and then, and it happens a lot, they will honey up to people like that. And good for you. For the winter, crack corn. You know, that'll keep them, it'll hold, and it'll make them happy. Keep an area clear for them to walk in and find the crack corn.
But, okay.
Yeah, good for you. I've never had that happen, but I like to hear stories like that.
Well, thanks. Go ahead, Carol.
She doesn't even mind like all my grandchildren.
Wow.
Seven of them can be up there, amazing. And she'll come right up and entertain them.
You know, they are called fool's hen for a reason. And unfortunately, back in the day, they used to take advantage of that, and they became the next chicken in the pot.
Oh, really? They tasty? Yeah.
Well, it tastes like chicken.
Well, and, you know, they're the fool's hen because they hang around with the grandkids. I mean, grandma's going to say, all right, you're done now. We'll see you next couple of weeks. Hey, we're done here on this program. Julie Hart, if people want to find out about the Breeding Bird Atlas, how do they do that?
They would go to ebird.org/atlasny or just Google New York Breeding Bird Atlas.
And Rich Guthrie, if people, you know, I have so many emails. I think I'm going to forward all these emails to you, and you'll have to do it.
Bring them on. I love them.
What's your email address, man?
Richard P., as in Peter, richardpguthrie@gmail.com.
Support.
G-U-T-H-R-I-E.
G-U-T-H-R-I-E.
Right.
And remember, 12 shopping days to Rich's birthday. Support comes from Herzog Law Firm, working to protect their clients' assets, focusing on Medicaid and estate planning, serving the Capital Region, Hudson Valley, and Adirondacks. 518-465-7581. Salem Farm Supply, carrying a stock of Kubota machinery and Kubota genuine parts with equipment for everyone, from farmers to homeowners, locations in Salem and Claverick, New York, salemfarmsupply.com. And Landis Arboretum, Esperance, presenting Fall Plant Book at Bake Sale this Saturday and Sunday, 10 to 4, featuring trees, shrubs, bulbs, perennials, and more, landisarboretum.org. Once again, thanks to Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart for being here. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Ed Rosen screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow we talk real estate with Renata and Alex. That's tomorrow at 2. We'll see you for that.